Stem cell science is changing medicine and our understanding of human development. Learn more with the Stem Cell Channel. Visit uctv.tv/stemcell.
Welcome everyone to A Closer Look, where today we're going to take a closer look at stem cells and human longevity. I'm Robert Signer. I'm an associate professor in the Division of Regenerative Medicine and the deputy director of the Sanford Stem Cell Discovery Center, which is part of the Sanford Stem Cell Institute here at UC San Diego. And I'm here today to take you on an adventure. Now, our adventure is to discover what many of us before have been looking for. This goes from ancient kings to great explorers to prolific minds of the Enlightenment to fictional action heroes and to billionaire tech bros. We are looking for the fountain of youth and the elixir of life. But our adventure won't involve circumnavigating the globe. It won't involve bathing in magic waters or trekking through booby-trapped jungles. No, our adventure is going to be right here. Because in each and every one of us, deep inside our bones, hidden within the inner workings of our stem cells, I believe, is the fountain of youth. Now, before we set off on this adventure, let's talk about the mission of this adventure. Now, when we're looking for the fountain of youth, well, sure, we all want to live to put more candles on that birthday cake. But I think what we really want is to be sure that we have the health, the strength, and the gusto to blow out all those candles along the way. And so our mission is to extend human health span. Now, I'm sure you all know what lifespan is, but for some of you, I'm guessing that health span might be a new term. So I want you to think of health span as the time that we live free of major diseases. That is, the time in which our lives in which we're healthy. Now, lifespan is easy to quantify. In the United States, expected lifespan is about 79 years. Health span, however, is a little harder to put a number to, but people have been trying. Now, one recent study looked at the incidence and average onset of all major diseases, and they estimated that health span in the United States is about 63 years. When I heard that, two things jumped out at me. One, 63 is not very old. Two, we're living about 16 years on average, or nearly 20% of our life after we've developed a major disease. So what's our mission? Well, it's not only to extend lifespan, but it's really about extending health span. We want to compress the period of our lives that are marked by morbidity so that we are living longer, healthier lives. So how do we do this? Well, let's first consider the diseases that are restricting our health span. There are four diseases, often referred to as the four horsemen of human disease, that are really the major drivers of morbidity as we age. These include cancer, cardiovascular disease, neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, and metabolic diseases like diabetes. And these four horsemen, well, they have one thing in common, and that is that the number one risk factor for all of these classes of diseases is aging. And I have to deliver some bad news. These aren't the only diseases. Lung disease, arthritis, osteoporosis, cataracts, hearing loss, back and neck pain, depression, and outcomes from COVID-19. Every single one of them, the leading cause is aging. And the incidence of all of these diseases doesn't just go up with age, it goes up exponentially as we get older. In fact, by the time we turn just 28 years old, aging is the number one risk factor for disease and death. And so what do we do about it? What do scientists and physicians, what do they do? What's the approach? Well, the approach has always been, if these diseases are causing the problem,
we have to treat or prevent these diseases. And so we've done this in a very disease-focused way. We have research that focuses on cancer. We have research that focuses on Alzheimer's disease. We have research that focuses on cardiovascular disease and diabetes. But I think it's time for us to change this paradigm. If we can understand and treat the main cause of these diseases, that is, we can treat aging, well, maybe we have the opportunity to prevent multiple age-related diseases. And I believe that the key to doing this lies in stem cells. So what are stem cells? Well, stem cells that I'm going to be talking about today are very rare cells that exist in each and every one of us in various tissues. And stem cells have two superpowers. The superpower number one is that stem cells have the ability to what we call self-renew. That is, they can make more of themselves and replenish our stem cells throughout our life. Superpower number two for stem cells is they have the ability to what we call differentiate. That is, they are a blank slate and they can produce all of the different types of specialized cells that exist within a given tissue. Now, the major type of stem cell that I'm going to be talking about today and that we work on in my laboratory are called hematopoietic stem cells. These are blood-forming stem cells that live in our bone marrow. Now, these stem cells, as I said, contain this superpower of self-renewal, and they differentiate to give rise to all of our different types of blood cells. This includes things like red blood cells and platelets, but also all of the white blood cells of our immune system. The problem is that as we age, those stem cell superpowers start to wane. And this happens in a few different ways. The first affects the power of self-renewal. Sometimes stem cells lose their ability to self-renew. As we age, this leads to a loss of stem cells and ultimately a loss of their ability to produce all of these other types of blood cells. Now, in the blood, this can lead to disorders like anemia, clotting deficiencies, and immune dysfunction. Now, the opposite of this can happen too. Stem cells can lose control of their ability to self-renew, or other cells learn to hijack stem cell self-renewal activity. When this happens, we lose control of our growth of those cells, they overgrow, and this drives the development of cancer. But it's not just self-renewal that goes awry with aging, it's also differentiation. So normally, these stem cells differentiate in a very balanced manner to produce the right number of each kind of cell that we need in our body. As we age, our blood-forming stem cells lose this balance. What happens is that they start to overproduce a certain type of white blood cell called myeloid cells. These are inflammatory cells that can drive things like chronic inflammation and inflammatory disease. And they stop producing lymphoid cells. Lymphoid cells are the ones that are really there to fight infection. And so, as we get older, our ability to fight infection goes down, and we suffer from chronic inflammation and inflammatory diseases. And so this is why I believe that studying blood-forming stem cells in particular is really important, because it's not only impacting diseases of the blood, but it's impacting all sorts of other diseases because of its role in the immune system and in inflammation. So that defects in blood-forming stem cells affect our health from our knees to our hearts to our brains and everything in between. Now, what causes stem cells to age? Well, in general, I think we know that aging is connected with stress. We can see it on the outside. We can feel it on the inside. And stem cells also age because of stress. But how does a stem cell experience stress? What does stress mean at the cellular and molecular level? This is where the work in my lab is making key breakthroughs, where we've been the first to discover that aging is happening through stress on proteins within our stem cells. So before we dive into that, let's take a step back and make sure we all understand exactly what a protein is. Proteins are the functional products of genes. What does that mean? Well, we know, we've all heard of DNA. We have lots of it packed into all of our cells that encodes about 20,000 different genes. Each of those genes is the instructions for how to build a protein. So that DNA is converted into what's called mRNA, and that mRNA is the blueprint for building a protein. A protein is what actually does something in the cell. It is the functional product. It is doing things. So let me explain this a little more, and let me give you an analogy. The proteins are like apps on your phone, right? Somewhere, someone has written a bunch of computer code that is buried within your phone. Think of that as the DNA. Now, that has to be interpreted by the machine and stored, and that's really just a bunch of zeros and ones. Think of that as the mRNA. But when it converts it to something tangible, something that you can use, like the apps on your phone that you open all the time, that you use to complete different tasks, well, those are the proteins. And the process of making proteins is so fundamentally important to life that for decades, we've believed that it must be happening the same way in every type of cell. Except what we've discovered is that stem cells manage this process of protein production completely differently than other kinds of cells. What we found about 10 years ago now is that stem cells make proteins unusually slowly. Stem cells are the proverbial tortoise. They believe that slow and steady wins the race. And like the tortoise, stem cells are long-lived. Other cells, well, they make protein fast, and they are the proverbial hare. They live fast and die young. Now, why do stem cells need to make proteins so slowly? Well, it turns out by making proteins slowly, they're making it more accurately. They're making fewer errors. So you can think of when you're making protein very quickly, you're going to start to put them together in ways that aren't always the best. And when that happens, what we call this is sort of protein misfolding. And these misfolded proteins, you can really think of as the trash of a cell. The cell doesn't want these. Why? One, they don't work the way that they're supposed to work. Two, if you make all this trash, it starts to pile up. And that can start to affect all sorts of other processes in the cell. And so stem cells really care about this. They do not want trash to pile up. They are in it for the long haul. Now, this process is so important that stem cells don't only count on making less mistakes when they make protein, they also have a completely different plan to deal with those mistakes and get rid of those bad proteins or protein trash. So stem cells take that protein trash, which is shown here in red, and they try to consolidate it in one area of the cell. And then what they do is they build a cage around it. That's shown in green. But this sort of cage of protein trash isn't just a protein landfill in the stem cells. Turns out it's actually a recycling plant. Stem cells preferentially use a very specialized recycling pathway to break down and reuse all of those resources. Because remember, stem cells need to care about sustainability. They are in it for the long haul. Now, what happens when we age? Well, these systems start to fall apart. And this protein trash starts to accumulate and pile up in our aging stem cells. This stresses out our stem cells and makes them start to malfunction as we get older. But there's some good news. The stem cells, they don't go down without a fight. They sound the alarm and they call in reinforcements. Meet Heat Shock Factor 1, or HSF1, which I think of as a superhero protein that gets called into action in stressed and aging stem cells. And you can see it enter the nucleus of the cell where it interacts with the DNA, and it launches a program to help reduce protein trash and to help stem cells cope with this accumulation of these misfolded proteins. So here's what happens, right? We have young stem cells that do a good job at keeping this protein trash at bay. Those stem cells have lots of energy and lots of potential to regenerate our tissues for a long period of time. As we age, that protein trash builds up in those stem cells and their power is lost. But our aging stem cells call in the reinforcements, they activate this HSF1 superhero, and they're able to partially reduce the amount of trash that's building up and maintain more of this regenerative potential. So is this the answer? Do we just need to supercharge HSF1 and now we can reverse the effects of aging? Well, I hate to break it to you, but there's a catch. Stem cells aren't the only cells that like HSF1. Cancer cells really like HSF1. What we found is that HSF1 boosts the expansion of precancerous stem cells and supports the development of cancer as we get older. This is the ultimate catch-22. Stem cells are fighting the forces of aging to stay fit and keep regenerating our tissues. But to do that, they have to elevate our risk of getting cancer. The stem cells are literally robbing Peter to pay Paul. What I've realized is that the answer is right in front of us. The blueprint for the Fountain of Youth is already pre-wired into long-lived stem cells. Stem cells know they don't want to have to deal with that trash and that stress, and that they know that calling in reinforcements can only do so much. The stem cells' secret to longevity is preventing the production and pileup of protein trash. And so we're taking that blueprint and we're trying to better it. How do we make stem cells even better at preventing this trash? Well, we've taken all sorts of approaches and we're starting to test it in the lab right now. And the results are amazing. So we have young stem cells. They have their regenerative potential, but eventually exhaust. We have old stem cells that start to accumulate trash. They call in reinforcements. They can partially block the problem, but you know, like we talked about, this can lead to cancer. Well, we've made old super stem cells. These stem cells are even better than normal stem cells at preventing the buildup of trash. They're less stressed out, and they live longer. But it's not just about stem cell fitness, right? Our goal is to prevent disease. Is that something we can really do by keeping our stem cells fit? Well, we're working on this right now, and I've never been more excited about what we're discovering. So let me share one piece of that with you today. This is the spleen from a healthy mouse. What we can do is to introduce a cancer-causing mutation that drives a very aggressive form of blood cancer. Within weeks, you can see the effect on the mouse's spleen. When we do the same thing in our mice that carry these super stem cells, we don't see that cancer coming. And so maybe we have found the fountain of youth. Maybe it really does exist within each of our stem cells and providing us the path forward, that preventing the accumulation of trash is the key to long health and long life. As Benjamin Franklin said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Let me take a moment to thank my really incredible and brilliant team that's been working on all of this research. I'm very fortunate to work with them every single day, as well as our many collaborators, and of course, our sources of funding that support our work. Thank you for listening. And with that, I'm going to pass the baton to my incredibly talented colleague, Dr. Shiri Gurcohen, who you heard about earlier. Dr. Gurcohen.
All right, welcome everyone, and thank you so much for coming. And I would like to take this opportunity also to thank the whole Sanford Stem Cell Institute team for putting this all together and bringing us all together to celebrate the beautiful things about stem cells. Because today, all of us in this room are the youngest we will ever be again. And if we are lucky enough, we will all age. But what if aging is not inevitable? What if we could grow old with time, but not really be worried about age-related disorders and diseases? So my name is Shiri. I'm an assistant professor at the Division of Regenerative Medicine at UC San Diego School of Medicine. And today I would like to discuss with you the unique approach that we're taking in my laboratory to make that question of living a healthy life for as long as possible to become a question of when and not just a question of if. And so let me just start by something that I find to be truly fascinating is the ability of our body to regenerate itself. It has a remarkable ability to regenerate itself. And in fact, every day we are losing and replacing billions of cells. And this is completely normal. The way that I like to think about it is that we all know how we woke up this morning, but we must have changed several times since then at the cellular level. We are not the same person anymore, right? Think about it. Every one of your organ, as we speak, is constantly regenerating. Some organs replace themselves very fast, like the intestine in the gut or our skin. Some organs replace themselves very slow, like the muscles. But the key player in this regenerative process are our stem cells in our body. And stem cells are not residing by themselves. They are not just doing what they're supposed to do by themselves. They're surrounded by multiple types of stem cells for other cells, stem cells and other cells as well. And they're receiving multiple cues that tells them what to do and when to do, when and where to regenerate a tissue. Think about it like a seed, even the driest seed, if you put it in the right soil, in the right, giving the right nutrients, the right amount of moist and the right amount of light, it will regenerate and produce the flowers. Very similarly, also our stem cells, they reside in areas that we called or termed niches. And those niches produce all the good stuff that stem cells need or telling the stem cells when and where to produce a tissue. So one way to think about it is that our stem cells are very unique because they have the ability to make more of themselves, to self-renew and to maintain their pool of stem cells in our body. But they can also create the tissue. And in order to do that, they are exposed to multiple types of signals that can come from blood vessels, nerve fibers. They can come from the mature tissue in which they reside in, immune cells, if we are exposed to infection. All of those signals can really tell each and every one of those stem cells at different points or different places in the tissue what exactly to produce, which cell to produce, how much to produce of that in order to create a tissue. And so from a single stem cell, we can actually rebuild an organ at the end of the day. So stem cells hold the power of regeneration, but stem cells can age. So if you already passed the age of 25, I think you can agree with me that regeneration is an arrow with a one negative direction. We all going to age, and it takes more and more time for stem cells to do what they used to do very, very efficiently. But what if it's not inevitable? What if those stem cells will be tricked to think that they're actually young, to do exactly what they were supposed to do, what they used to do when we were young? And In order for us to answer those questions and to dive into the problem of what is happening to the stem cells and if we can trick them to think if they're young for a longer time, we need to first figure out how do we know that we're aging, because none of us have those special glasses to look inside of our tissues and look at our gut and say, oh, today did not regenerate very fast, or our lungs did not do their what they're supposed to be today, right? So, but there's one organ in our body that each and every one of you look right in the morning when you're waking up and going to wash your face, and this is your skin. The largest organ of our body. And if I'll ask each and every one of you, who is the old person and who is the young person in this picture, everyone will be able to address that. And the reason is that you can see the fine line, the texture, the color of the hair, the wounds that didn't heal, right? All of that is very clear for us that something is happening. So how fast are we aging? Right? How fast can we actually, or our skin actually age? It turns that when we're young, when we're babies, we can replace our skin very fast. Within 2 weeks, we have a completely new skin. And I think every parent here in the audience can test that, you know, if their kids had a scratch or something like that, within a few days, that it was completely gone. But as we grow older and older, those small scratches are no longer small scratches, and it takes more and more time for them to heal and to close the wound. And the real problem of this is that those small little wounds can turn to be chronic wounds that simply never heals. And that's really the real problem, because if you think about the amount of people in the United States with chronic wounds, exceed the number of people that suffer from breast cancer, lung cancer, and colon cancer combine. It's a lot of people, and it's a major health burden. We know that chronic wound disease will usually be more in older patients, and we do see within the past 5 years more and more people suffering from chronic wound diseases. So we need a better solution. We need to better understand how we can make those stem cells do what they're supposed to do. And ever since I was a little girl, I was always intrigued by the things that are hidden from the naked eye. The fact that I don't see doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, right? And so in my laboratory, we are using the microscope that enables us to see cells at the cellular level. What are they doing? When are they doing it? And really zooming in on those stem cells that regenerate our tissues. Now, if I will ask each and every one of you to look at the palm of your hand or the back of your hand, you won't see much moving, right? You will see your hand, but nothing more than that. But through the microscope, we can see our stem cells, those that reside really, really deep in our tissues, they are moving a lot. They're constantly active. They are talking with each other. They're almost as if they're dancing with each other, sensing each other to make sure that our tissues are constantly regenerating and constantly repairing what needs to be repaired. So your tissues are definitely not static. And thinking about the skin as the largest organ of our body, it's also the largest home for the multiple types of stem cells. It's a home for the epidermal stem cells that will create your skin. It's a home for melanocyte stem cells that will create the color of our hair, the color of our skin. It's also a home for the hair follicle stem cells that will create, in my view at least, beautiful structures of the hair follicle. And so if we look at those hair follicle as a mini organ that exists in each and every one of our skin, we can see that when we're young, the hair follicle will spend about half of their time in the resting phase and then half of their time in a more active phase. As we grow older and older, those hair follicle will spend less and less of their time on the growth phase. And I think, you know, a lot of people can feel this on their own body, that their hair is not growing as fast as it used to be. So those dynamics in rest to activation is not only true in aging, but it's also actually true for many types of different stressors. We know that when we are stressed, it's a common belief that we are starting to lose the pigments of our hair and we're turning gray. We know, or every woman that ever had was pregnant will say that that was the best time of her life, that her hair grew as beautiful as possible. We also know that when we don't sleep as much, our skin looks dull and not as bright as it used to be, right? All of those things is things that you can wake up in the morning and clearly see, okay, something is happening. And maybe what we are actually seeing on the surface of our skin is actually a mirror to our internal organs, because again, we don't have that magical glasses to tell us, oh, our internal organs and our other important organs are not regenerating to the same extent. So in my lab, we're trying to take a unique approach by asking how all of those systemic changes and those systemic, if we slept enough or if we, what we ate, if we're stressed, how the stem cells can know all of those systemic changes. And the unique approach is that we are looking at the stem, at the connection between stem cells to their vascular system, because the vascular system is actually connecting all of our body together. It creates a network in our body that can transfer information from one site to the other. And it's really a good model to study how stem cells feel that stress. So usually when I talk about the vascular system, most of you guys be probably thinking about the blood vascular system, which is true. This is a system that will carry blood and nutrients into the tissues. But we also have one more vascular system that is less studied, and this is the lymphatic vascular system. And the lymphatic system, although less studied, is very, very important, because as we have the blood circulatory system that will transfer information, the lymphatic system will be there to drain back all of those fluids, immune cells, toxin, fats, and proteins back into the circulatory system and for immune prevalence. If the lymphatic system is not working now as good as it's supposed to do, now we have a lot of fluids, lots of proteins, lots of toxins accumulating in the tissues, and that's probably not what we want to have. So one way to think about it is like if you are stuck in a rainy day in the city, one thing that you really want to have is an umbrella, but you're also trusting the city to make sure that, you know, the drainage system of the city is working properly so you're not getting wet. But if the drainage system is not working, I don't think umbrella will help you in this case, right? So you will get very, very wet. And in fact, what we know is that dysfunctional lymphatic system, whether it's drainage or its architecture, is associated with many age-related pathologies, including Alzheimer's, including autoimmune diseases, chronic wounds that I mentioned, cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, cancers, and more. And so we are trying to understand in my laboratory, can the vascular system really guard stem cell youthfulness? Can the vascular system is the key for us to understand how stem cells can maintain their youth potential? But to answer that question, we have a little hurdle to pass, because the vascular system is a three-dimensional system. And it's a very complex system to visualize under the microscope, as I told you. And so think about it like you're taking an image under the water. There's a lot of structure, beautiful colors, but you can't really see it, right? It's all kind of look very opaque. But we have a way and technology to actually make that opaque picture completely transparent, so we can appreciate the color, the texture, and the architecture of that picture. So in a very similar way, what we're doing is we're taking our skin, which is completely opaque, and turning it to be completely transparent. And now we can visualize those complex structure of the vascular system in the resolution of the intact tissue. And so this is what we were finding in a very surprising way, is that the hair follicle stem cells here in green were tightly associated with the lymphatic vascular system here in red. So now we can look at this in a three-dimensional picture, and you can appreciate how the stem cells are nesting on top of the lymphatics, almost as if it was their cushion, right? But that is very peculiar. And why I'm saying that it's peculiar, because why would you put in your body the most important component, your stem cells, next to a garbage can? it does not make a lot of sense, right? Why would you put this very important component there? So maybe it's only in the hair follicle, but not in any other organ. So we turn to look at other epithelial organ, and in this case, we looked at the intestine because the hair follicle undergoes cycles of activation, but the intestine is constantly regenerating. So maybe there, they actually don't need lymphatics. So again, we employ similar three-dimensional imaging of the vascular system. And so what you can see here is a reconstruction of the vascular system in a three-dimensional way. We could visualize the blood vessels and the lymphatic vessels. And what we were able to find is that the lymphatics really creating a network where the stem cells usually reside. And indeed, we found that the gut stem cells, those that will create and regenerate our intestine, also nesting the lymphatic vascular system. So it's not only true for the hair, it's also true for the intestine. And as opposed to what we were tending to think is that the lymphatic is only a trash system in the body, maybe it's actually the new gold that stem cells really, really need for their regenerative capacity. So is it true? Why are we losing hair as we age? Are we losing the stem cells and then at the end of the day there's no hope? Or are we losing the soil? What really needs to be there to provide those inductive signals for the stem cells to regenerate our organs? So we wanted to ask that question, but it's not a very easy question to ask because in our tissues, we have multiple types of stem cells, as I mentioned. Think about it like a pile of Lego. And within all of this pile of Lego, you have just a small, small, small piece, a few pieces that compose the stem cells. So in the lab, what we are able to do is actually sort all of those stem cells and ask each and every one of that cubes, what are they expressing? What is their identity, and what is happening to them? Are they different between young stem cells and aged stem cells? And the only thing that I really want you to take from that picture is that it's almost identical. When we looked at the age cubes and on the young cubes, they look almost the same, a little bit less, a little bit more, but overall, their identity maintained almost at the same level. Clearly, they do not do what they're supposed to do, and they're not growing hair. So what is happening? What is wrong? Together with my colleague, Yejing Ye, we decided to take this imaging approach because, again, I enjoy looking at those stem cells. And what we were able to see is that in the young stem cells here in green, those young stem cells create a structure that is very important for their behavior. We call it the bulge, the stem cell niche. When we looked at the old stem cells, all of a sudden, they lost this architecture. They completely collapsed into one signal structure and did not maintain the bulge structure as we were expecting to. What I do want to draw your attention to, though, is that the stem cells are still there. So there's still hope. What is happening to the lymphatic, on the other hand? I think you can clearly appreciate that the lymphatic system in the aged skin completely collapse as well. Their structure, their function, their architecture is no longer intact. But what happened about their connection with the stem cells? Are they still connecting with the stem cells? So we took a look at this connection as well. Here, lymphatics are in blue and the stem cells are in yellow. And what we were able to see is that the stem cells are still being nutriented by the blood vessels, but they are very, very far away from the lymphatics. They are no longer nesting lymphatic anymore. In the lab, we're able to use transgenic animal to actually impose that collapse of the structure of the lymphatic vascular system. Using transgenic animals, we are able to express or to remove a protein that comes from the stem cells themselves that regulate lymphatic function. And so we are able to take young skin and turn it basically to almost as if it was an old skin in terms of the lymphatic vascular system. So what is happening to their hair? Normally, we have hair follicles all synchronized at the same stages, but when their lymphatic is collapsing, they're starting to become asynchronized. You can see small follicles with big follicles, and those big follicles that became asynchronous, they also become very fast hyperplastic. At the end of the day, what we found is what you can see here in this picture are basically twins. They were born to the same mom at the same day, the same time. One of them has a completely normal lymphatic system, and the other one has a collapsed lymphatic system. And what we found is that the mouse, even though it's young, that has a collapsed lymphatic system, now starts to lose hair precociously at the time where normally they need to grow hair just as if it was young. So we can speed up aging very fast, but can we actually reverse it? And I think this is what you guys are more interested in. So my colleague actually did a very, very interesting experiment. We took young stem cells and we took old stem cells. We also took the environment that those stem cells reside in, the young environment and the old environment, and now we mixed and matched between them. What we found is that if you take young stem cells and you just put them in an old environment, they're not able to regenerate an organ. They're not able to grow hair anymore. But when you take the old stem cells and you put them simply in a young environment that was sufficient for them to be tricked to think that they're young, to think that now I am a young stem cells and to regenerate an organ and to grow hair. So this is all very exciting, and while we are still in search of what exactly this young environment is doing, we still need to figure out also if it's true in humans. And as part of the vascular theory of aging that put the vascular system at the center of the aging process, vascular aging is a key mechanism for aging. And what has been shown before is that by simply turning your vascular system to just remain fit better, just to become better within your body and not to decline, what they found is that it can delay aging and enhance longevity and lifespan of these mice. So there's much more to be done, and although, you know, if most of you thought or were anxious to get out of here today with the pill to just look better or look younger, aging science takes a long time. And the reason for it is not just because we are interested or waiting for those processes to happen, waiting to see if we can actually delay aging. We also need to make sure that what we're doing is safe. And the reason for that safety is that stem cells can function as a double-edged sword. And when stem cell balance cell behavior is not happening anymore and they are starting to become, their division and cell proliferation is not balanced, then they can create cancer. And so this uncontrolled behavior is something that we are very mindful for, and we need to make sure that whatever we're doing, every manipulation that we're doing is to prevent cancer at the end of the day. What's interesting is that if you're looking at the young tissue and think about each and every dot in this picture as genetic alternation in stem cells, so those cells have a lot of them, right, even in the young. But the genetic alternation that we see in this picture, what we call mutations, the mutation burden just increase with age. So you can see more and more of those dots, and those dots are bigger, which means that those mutated cells are just growing more and more. But is it sufficient to create cancer? Are these mutations sufficient to create cancer? In fact, if you look and scientists look at the normal skin and the skin area that is highly exposed to the sun and UV damage, they found lots of mutations there. But thankfully, those tissues were not had not showing any signs of cancer. So there must be something else. There has to be something else that it may be that those mutations are important but not sufficient to create cancer. And maybe the environment, the soil that those mutated cells reside in can actually guide them towards to become young, age, or eventually cancer one. And so what we did in the laboratory is, again, to use genetic animals to disrupt the lymphatic system for a longer time point. And what we found is that those hair follicles that reside in areas with dysfunctional lymphatics became very, very big and turned to be hyperplastic, really suggesting to us that there is something wrong with their ability to control their proliferation. In fact, what we found is that those very, very big follicles, those very big stem cells that could not control their proliferation anymore, were surrounded by the most dilated and dysfunctional lymphatic. Those are the white cells over here. So we're all living in a very exciting time now, because I showed you that lymphatic form a niche for the hair follicle stem cells, for the intestinal stem cells. It's important for the regeneration, for the youthfulness. And although not very stem cell-centric work, others have shown that lymphatic vascular system is important for brain function, heart regeneration, and most recently been discovered to reside also in the bones. So just maybe to put that question up front, maybe actually the fountain of youth runs within us, within our vascular system. And simply what we need to do is to take care of our vascular system much, much better, because the same signal that will transfer to our skin will go to our intestine, will go to our liver, will go to each and every one of our organs. And so making those vascular system just much better fit will make those stem cells remain youth. And I want to conclude with an optimistic point of view and to cheer with all of you to life. Growing up in a family that always cheered to life with every happy occasion, I feel that we are work very hard to ensure that living a healthy life for as long as possible will be a question of when and not if. But we all need to remember, or equally importantly, important to remember, that to truly live our life, to make the most of the present, to celebrate successes, to celebrate achievements, and really to live. So with that, really to thank the most important people in my lab that really doing phenomenal work, and I hope that you all will be able to read more about their amazing discoveries in the future. Collaborators, funding resources, and thank you so much for your attention.
Hi, thank you. Very nice. One of the themes both of you've mentioned was the buildup of material in the cells. And one of the hacks that people have been using for longevity now is diet restriction, restricted calories. What you showed also was the buildup of proteins in the stem cells. Perhaps it should be restrictions of protein, because as you age, you metabolize protein less. Thank you.
Sure. So the question's about dietary restriction, which has been sort of shown in animal models to extend longevity, and I think has inspired certain people to try to take the same initiatives. Well, we know that nutrients matter, right? And what we take into our body in that form can actually activate growth pathways. And some of that growing involves the production of new proteins in our cells and can lead ultimately to some of the stressors that I talked about in terms of building proteins more quickly or incorrectly, as it may be. And so there is a connection between some of those molecular pathways in dietary restriction and the pathways on protein production, like I talked about. But I think it's still early days to understand how fully that is working. I think there are certainly other things that will be going on as well, that both probably good and bad, that we need to understand in that regard. And I think you also asked maybe about specifically about eating protein. And so we're actually launching a project in the lab to look at specific different diet regimens to understand how this is affecting some of these biomarkers and the stem cell fitness that we talked about.
There was a recent paper about restriction of taurine to extend life. Taurine, it's a supplement.
I've just recently seen this urban legend of a Greenland shark that was like 450 years old. Does your lab look at examples in nature where this animal is just so old and it's kind of like working? You mentioned the tortoise. Are you guys like cross-referencing examples of that are working in your research at all?
So there are lots of studies actually that have correlated different aspects of multiple different things with mammalian lifespan. And one of them actually has to do with protein quality as well, where there is a connection there. Now, accessing some of those animals to work on them can be challenging, and there are people that are doing those and working in particularly long-lived organisms, but you know, we definitely use that as a guidance based on what's already known to say, are we on the right track here? Maybe we should be thinking about something a little bit differently.
Yeah, I think in a similar way, what we are trying to understand is if similar pathways that we are looking at, and whether, you know, in our view, vascular system or drainage system, consistent with animals that, for example, live longer or live shorter life. So we are always looking at that back and forth. But I think an interesting way to think about that, and I just mentioned it very briefly, about sleep, and we are spending about one third of our life sleeping. Thinking about why are we doing it and how within animals that either live longer or live very short life, how those kind of processes that can again transform through the vascular system will guide stem cells to become more youth or actually old faster. So we are looking at actually how systemic things that are happening within those animals, such as sleep and stress, will affect similarly or differently within across different organisms.
Cool, if you don't mind, I have another question. Do you have any real timeline for when there might be a breakthrough for this sort of thing?
Where's the pill?
I think we have to be realistic and see that breakthroughs are happening all the time, right? Like the changes that are happening to our health, our well-being, you know, we all see them in our lifetimes, right? I'm sure you remember a time when it was, you know, rare to meet a cancer survivor. And now I bet everyone in this room knows multiple cancer survivors, right? We are making progress. Progress takes time. And so it's hard to put a specific timeline on it, but it's constant, right? Sometimes it's slow and sometimes it's quick, but we're always working to move forward.
So I'm curious about inflammation. Have you guys seen any differences in your old versus young stem cells in terms of inflammatory gene expression? Is it being reversed when you get rid of all those proteins accumulating? Do you see any, you know, changes in recruitment of immune cells when you transplant the cells into a different niche? I'm curious. Which you guys find?
You want to start?
Go ahead.
Okay. So in terms of the immune system, you know, my background is actually in immunology. When I moved from the hematopoietic system to the skin, you know, one of the things that I, of course, looked at is the immune system and what is happening there. I think in age, what we do see is a lot of changes within the immune system. The immune system by itself is aged, undergo aging processes. What's interesting, I think, with the lymphatic vascular system is that it's known at least to have this ability to drain the immune cells to the lymph nodes. What we do know is that with age, that drainage process decreases. And so I think, you know, we can relate that to a lot of immune diseases, at least, that we know that happen more and more in age because we don't have that teaching or the school kind of all of the pathogens that immune cells can eat and then teach the immune system, oh, this is a bad thing. So those are things that we clearly see in age individuals. The real question, I think, is how we can actually improve it, right? And I think it's very exciting to think about this because we have ways now to improve lymphatic drainage much, much better. And if we can do that, maybe we can prevent the whole problem with immune system in older individuals. So exciting, but we're not there yet, as Rob just mentioned.
Over here. Would you comment on the DNA methylation clock in aging, which is, you know, I think, I don't know how that integrates with the kind of work you're doing.
You want me to take this one?
I'm happy to.
you know, I think, so What the question is referring to is that there are a lot of efforts to establish molecular clocks of aging so that we can look inside a cell and say, how old is this cell at the molecular level, not just in terms of chronological age? And this has been looking at something called methylation, which is something that accessorizes our DNA and allows genes to turn on and off at different rates. And there are many changes that happen with these with age. And so there's been a lot of effort to establish these molecular aging clocks. And I'll say that the jury's a little bit still out, right? There are papers coming out all the time wondering what is the connection here. We don't fully understand what these clocks are telling us. There are some that look really accurate, some that make us scratch our heads a little more. But we haven't yet drawn the connection, not because we haven't, mostly because we haven't looked yet at that particular aspect of things. So it's possible that there will be a connection, but
the Clock Foundation has a methylation array that you can just send your sample and they can tell you what your cells are, you know, compare it to everything else.
I can just maybe comment a small thing about this is just thinking about methylation and any changes that we have, you know, the accessories that we're putting on our DNA at the end of the day, how dynamic it is, right, in many ways. So if there is a clock that is being imposed by those changes that are happening, methylation, acetylation, for example, how dynamic they are and what are they telling us about the potential of the stem cells. So hopefully you will read soon about a work that we're working on right now, but it seems that a lot of those changes can actually be imposed by the lymphatic vascular system as well, methylation and acetylation. And I think, you know, we don't know exactly if it is correlates with aging, but it's very, very dynamic. And it really tells us what the potential of the stem cells will be. And that's an interesting thing because we can change the potential whether to do what they're supposed to do just to regenerate an organ, maybe to become plastic to regenerate a different organ, and maybe just to rejuvenate. So it's really exciting times, I think, in that regards.
All right, well, I want to thank Dr. Cohen
and
Dr. Kat Jamieson. And, you know, we have an incredible staff of people that put this event together. So thank you to Marcy and Catherine. And who else?
Entire
I can't see back there. There's an entire team. So thank you all. Kirsten, thank you all for putting this amazing event together. Thank you for attending.